kid, I was the kind of kid who never wanted to leave his parents' house. Like, I really honestly thought I would never move out until I got married. That was just who I was. And then when I decided to preach, it took me away from home, and there was a possibility of going to Oregon. As terrible as Oregon is, I almost went there. And then that didn't work out, and I ended up going to Florida College, which was great. But if you know geography at all, you know that Florida and Washington are about as far apart in the United States as you can get. That first year was tough. When I went there, I knew like a total of two people or three people there. There was a picture taken at Florida College, like one of the first days there, and it was in the gym, and everyone's in this big circle, and I have this picture. I'll show it to you if you want to see it. There's like this big circle of students, and literally you can see me sitting by myself behind this large circle of students. Like that was where I was at when I went there. It was lonely. And that, you know, as things go, and it was great. I loved Florida College. I made a lot of friends. My first year, I found a really good group of guys who were older than me, who I looked up to, who pushed me to be better and encouraged me a whole lot. And it helped me to be, in a lot of ways, the person I am. Just showing me what it meant to study the Bible and showing me what it meant to be faithful and showing me, just pushing me to realize what was important in life. And I appreciate their friendship. I appreciated their friendship so much. I still do. I knew a lot of them were leaving after the first year, but some of them were supposed to stay. But when I got to Florida College my second year, literally, I'm not exaggerating, all of them had left. Every single one. And I felt bereft again. Like when I got back there, I felt the same way I did at the beginning of the first year. It was different because I still had friends, but what I didn't have was someone to keep me grounded. I didn't have a kind of friend, you know those kind of friends that know you well enough to call you stupid? The kind of friends that will call you out on stuff and tell you, like, hey, like, you need to be doing this more. You're not that great. I needed that. I didn't have it. And I remember that second year, I felt lonely a lot. And it was funny because there's a lot of people, like, the second year was a lot different than my first year. A lot of people knew me, and it was different. But none of those things mattered because I didn't have someone that was close like a brother. And I ended up searching and searching. I literally, like, went on a hunt for one friend. And I found one. I was glad to have found one. One of the teachers, actually, Adam Grieving. And we got really close, and he was closer than a brother. And I just share all this to say, through this time, I ended up reading this psalm a lot, the 121st psalm, and it just became close to me. When I was going through, and this is the beauty of the psalms, is that when you're going through difficult things, and in a lot of ways, that wasn't challenging. I mean, it shouldn't have been. I mean, I feel sometimes dramatic when I talk about it like that. But it was honestly really hard for me. It was a hard time in my life because I felt aimless in some ways, and I felt alone. But this psalm through that time became just became very important to me. It became close to my heart, and I would think about it a lot. And through that time, this psalm kind of helped me get through it. And so this tonight, I just wanted to share this psalm. It's not going to be a super complicated or complex lesson by any means. Tonight is just an encouragement to read this psalm and to think about it, and maybe through your week, dwell on this psalm and meditate, have it in your mind, and think about, and maybe if you need encouragement, just dwell on it and be encouraged by what faithful people, what God's people in times before have written when they were going through maybe discouragement just like we were. I think that's really encouraging. I'm going to read this. I would encourage you as I read this. I usually want you to follow along. Tonight, I just want you to listen to this. Maybe open your Bibles after I'm done reading it. But I want you to, if you close your eyes, you have to, but just try and listen. Try and listen to this psalm because it's a poem, and poems are meant to be listened to more than anything. And I just encourage you to listen best you can, maybe close your eyes, whatever you have to do, and just listen to the beauty of this psalm. I'm going to read it. I will lift up my eyes to the mountains. From where shall my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. You see, when I was felt alone, when I felt like, you know, just like I was in a difficult, discouraged situation, this psalm, you can see why it might be important to me. This is a really beautiful psalm. I want to talk a second. You see, if you have a subtitle in that psalm, it says Psalm 121, and after that it says A Song of Ascents. Psalms 120 through 135, I believe. Psalms 120 through 134, that's right. Through Psalm 134, they're all called the Song of Ascents, or Songs of Degrees. Some people call them the Songs for the Goings Up, or the Pilgrim's Songs. People aren't sure what this description is. They were put in there by the people who compiled the book of the Psalms. These subtitles were put on these 15 psalms. And people disagree about what it means, but a lot of people come to the conclusion that these were psalms that pilgrims, that faithful Jewish people would sing or recite on their way to Jerusalem for the three feasts every year that brought them back to Jerusalem. But these were the 15 psalms that were important to them as they went back to Jerusalem. And that may or may not be true, but as I thought about that, for this psalm especially, it made sense to me. It fit, at least. A lot of these themes fit in my idea of someone who is faithful to God, walking back this long journey through night and day, through, you know, exposure, through wilderness, looking towards Jerusalem, and just be encouraged by these words. What I want to do is simple, though. I just want to go through the four sections, two verses each, and kind of just think about these encouragements and think about them for ourselves and try and make them personal. Now, what I did is I had three ways of classifying this psalm. I don't know if it's just what I did. I don't know if it's super helpful, but I kind of went through, and my first classifications, you can call them the but nots, I guess. The second ones were the God of, and the third ones are the keeper. And I'll tell you what those mean as we go through, but I kind of had three different ways of classifying these four sections. And I'll explain as it goes on. It probably doesn't make any sense right now, but just stay with me for a second, and I'll kind of go through these sections. If we think about this, though, starting in verse 1, looking at Psalm 121 and verse 1, and start thinking about this idea of possibly these people going back to Jerusalem and looking towards the mountain of Jerusalem, looking towards the mountains of Jerusalem and thinking of this psalm, you can understand maybe why this word, this phrase in verse 1, what it means. I will lift up my eyes to the mountains. From where shall my help come? It seems to me that maybe this person who was writing this psalm was walking back to Jerusalem. They see the mountain of Jerusalem, and they see and they think about the personification of God's presence there, right? That when they look at Jerusalem, they think about the temple there, and they think of all of God's promises through his people, through this temple, through his priesthood. And they look and they say, man, that's where God is, but I'm not there. God is in Jerusalem. God is in those mountains. God is up there, but I'm here. And the psalmist asks, well, where's my help going to come from? I'm not in the temple. I'm not among God's people. I'm not there. Where's my help going to come from? And then verse 2, the psalmist writes, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. You see, a lot of times it's easy to get discouraged because we're separated. And this is what one of the first classifications for these first two verses, I say, we're separated but not. There's this idea that we can be separated from God's people. We can be separated from the people that we love. When I was in Florida, I was separated from my family. And in a lot of ways, it made me feel separate from my faith. But we start thinking about where maybe we're separate from our church family. When I visit other places, I'm separate from my family here. But you see, God may be in the temple. He may have been in Jerusalem. He may be in his church. And we may be separate from all those ways that we access God through his family, through his promises. But the truth of the matter is, even if you're separate from all these things, the God who made heaven and earth is still there. And that's an important concept, an important thing to remind ourselves of, because I know it's a simple concept, and it's not mind-blowing by any means, but it's something we just feel, isn't it? That when we're apart from the things that we value, when we're apart from the people that love us and encourage us, so often we feel separated even from God. And it's easy, even when things are fine. That's why I felt dramatic about sharing that story from Florida College, because it's like nothing was that bad. It's not like I was destitute. It's not like I was going without food or anything. I was completely fine. But it felt a certain way. It felt separated. And so often in periods of our lives, for whatever reason, we feel this way, right? We just go through periods of our lives. Things can be peachy keen and absolutely great, and we can still, for whatever reason, just feel separated and lonely. And I imagine maybe the psalmist looked towards Jerusalem and wanted to be there, wanted to be with God's people worshiping and celebrating these feasts and just being there in God's presence with his people, but he wasn't. And he thought, where's my help going to come from? And then he remembered, you know what? God made heavens and the earth. He didn't just make Jerusalem. He didn't just make there. He's here too. And so in the first few verses, I see the idea of being separated, but not being separated. Then he keeps going, and he continues talking, verse 3. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Maybe as they're walking up to Jerusalem, the road was precarious. I mean, think about the parable of the Good Samaritan, how he finds this person on the side of the road up to Jerusalem, and they're just in a ditch, abandoned. The road to Jerusalem isn't the safest road. And a lot of times it was precarious. And I think of this idea as walking this long journey, you're tired, and there's a lot of, maybe you have blisters, whatever, and it just seems like a dangerous, treacherous road. And the idea of God even keeping your feet so you don't slip. And while you're out there sleeping, exposed to the world and just in a dangerous place, God doesn't sleep and he doesn't slumber. There's an idea of this precarious situation, right? Where you're in this precarious place in life, but because God is with you, because the psalmist had faith that God was with him or her, it was precarious, but it wasn't. Precarious, but not precarious. He won't allow your foot to slip even. And while you're sleeping, God's awake, watching over you. There's something that we understand innately from being children about the nighttime, right? I remember being a kid and being afraid. And I also remember, I was just telling someone about this on Friday night, that my mom, it seemed like she never slept. It seemed like she was never asleep, like she was always awake. Like when I was a kid and I was like, you know, really young, and I would go down and like be scared, so I'd get in my parents' bed. When I'd get to my parents' bed, my mom would have the sheets back already for me. It seemed like she never slept, but she did. But there was a confidence and an assurance and just an encouragement from me going down there knowing that she was ready to comfort me. And that illusion wasn't real. The thing is, that's how God is. That even when it's 4 o'clock in the morning, we're discouraged and we think there's no one there, God is awake. Through 24/7, God is present, he's awake, watching over our situation, no matter how lonely and precarious and scary it seems. Continue on verse 5. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. See, they're out in the wilderness, and this person maybe going to Jerusalem is out and exposed. They're exposed to the elements. They're exposed to the sun by day and the moon by night. I don't know if by the moon by night was like a literal, I don't think the moon was out to get them. But maybe it's just this personification of the moon being all the fears of nighttime, the worries of bandits or of wild animals or anything like that. But the fears of that come around at nighttime, you don't know what's surrounding you. But the idea is that this person is exposed to the dangers of the world. They're exposed, but with God they're not. Because God is their shade on the right hand. The sun won't affect them by day, and the moon won't hurt them by night. No matter how exposed or weak or, I don't know, in danger we feel, God is there. And continue on verse 7, to end the psalm, the Lord will protect you from all evil. He will keep your soul. The Lord will guard your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. And the last one I said was, while we're in danger, there's the idea that God's going to keep us and protect us from all evil. We're endangered, but we're not. And all these things are not complicated concepts by any means. But the thing is, when we're going through our day-to-day lives and there's things that just seem discouraging or dangerous or difficult or we can't really deal with them in the right way, and we start getting so caught up in the moment, in the journey to where we're going, we get distracted by all the physical things around us and all the difficulties and distractions. We get caught up in all how people treat us and how everything is going in our lives, and we just forget to think and forget to remember. Forget to remember is redundant. We forget that God is there. And this psalmist sees all these things around him. He sees the mountains. He sees the distance from Jerusalem. He sees the fact that it's a treacherous road. And he's worried about the dangers of the daytime, the sun. He's worried about the dangers of the nighttime. He's worried about all the evil. But the one thing that keeps him from being consumed by all this fear is the fact that he remembers that God is going to be his keeper. You see, God is, and this is another way I classified these sections, in verses 1 through 2, 1 and 2, God is the God of the hills. And in verses 3 and 4, God is a God of wakefulness. He never sleeps. And in verses 5 and 6, God is the God of sun and moon, or God of the shade. And in verses 7 and 8, God is the God of your goings about. And I like that last one because the last verse of this psalm is so encouraging, isn't it? The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. You see, this psalmist maybe thought of all the journeys he might have to take to and from Jerusalem, all the journeys he had to go on. And when he, at the end of this thought process, at the end of this prayer maybe, or this poem, he just remembered, you know what? Whenever I'm going anywhere, from point A to point B, whenever I'm traveling, whenever I'm in a situation where I feel weak, God's there keeping it in his mind, keeping it in his ledger. All right, Ben is going somewhere. He needs some help. He needs some protection. I'm going to make sure that I have him in my mind. He's going out. All right, wrote that down. Ben left the house at 6:30. He came back 4 o'clock. I don't know. And I just think it's so valuable to think about that. That's what the point the psalmist got to was the fact that God keeps it like in a ledger. That God is thinking about you, thinking about me and each one of us, thinking, you know what, they're gone. I'm going to keep my eye on them. And sometimes that's a thought we need, isn't it? To remember that wherever we go, whatever, no matter how difficult or lonely, or no matter how evil and dangerous this world seems, that God looks over his people and he keeps them. And that word keep is really important. I don't know if you see it. The translators, for whatever reason, translate it differently in here, but the word keep comes up again and again and again in this psalm. It starts in verse 3 where it says, "He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun will not smite you by day, nor the moon by night." And my version says the Lord will protect you. But in verse 7, it's the same word. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your soul. And in verse 8, it says the Lord will guard you or going out. But that's still the same word. The word is keep. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. So another way I classify these four sections of the psalm, there's, you know, the ones where they're either separated but not, and there's another one where the God of all these things. But the last way I classified all these things was that God is a keeper of things. In verses 1 and 2, God is the keeper of heaven and earth. And I think about this, and the ideas of what God keeps, it goes from greater to lesser. And you'll see what I mean, but the first thing is that God made everything. He made the heavens, and he made the earth. And he's mindful of it all. He's in control of it all. He has power over all of it. He made it all. And so he keeps it in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. And that song is a song we sing with our kids, but there's a reason it's so encouraging to think about it. God, he's got the whole world in his hands. All of it. It's in his control. In verses 3 and 4, God is the keeper of Israel. And for us, maybe the application we can think of is that God is the keeper of his people. Not only is he the keeper of this entire world, but he also keeps his people in a special place in his hands, in his mind, and in his heart. He's mindful of those who are faithful to him. He's the keeper of his people. And in verses 6 and in verses 5 and 6, it starts off by saying, the Lord is your keeper. And it gets even more personal. The Lord is the keeper of me and you. He keeps us. And in verses 7 and 8, it gets even more personal. The Lord will keep you from all evil. The Lord will keep your soul. You have some control over keeping yourself, don't you? You don't have a lot of control over your soul. But God keeps that. God is the keeper of your soul in ways that you can't even really understand. God intimately knows you. Jesus talks about he knows every hair on your head is numbered in God's mind. He knows them. He knows you better than you know yourself. He keeps your soul in his heart and in his hands. There's not much I can say about that, just something to think about, right? I can't encourage you any more than those words do themselves. We have to keep these words in our heart. But I just love the fact that God, thinking about the God as the keeper of all these things, that goes from the keeper of the heavens and earth down to the keeper of our very soul. That God is in control of all of that and keeps all of that, but he's also so mindful of the minuscule and the small. Because that's how it feels. And when we start looking in the grand scheme of this world and all the difficulties and all the big things and how huge it is, how big the universe is, we feel so tiny. And we feel sometimes even more alone and just destitute. But when we start thinking and getting back to remembering our faith and our relationship with God, how much he cares. He's not only the keeper of heavens and earth, but he's the keeper of our very soul. And that's just a thought to keep in your hearts. There's a couple lessons, just walking away from this. That's all I really had to exposit from these verses. That's all I really wanted to share. There's a couple lessons I wanted us to think about as we walk away from it, though. This psalm was important to me. I'll share this personal lesson first. This psalm was important to me, and still is, because people aren't reliable. Those guys I thought were going to be there for me, they left. I don't have any hard feelings. I kind of did then, a little bit. I got over it, because they were living their life, you know. They were pursuing what they wanted to pursue, and that was great. I'm happy for them. But people just aren't reliable. they have their own concerns, they have their own worries, and a lot of times they're not reliable because they're doing what they need to do. And that's not personal towards us, but a lot of times it just takes them away from us, doesn't it? And beyond their choices, people aren't reliable because they get sick. People get sick. And there's not a thing you can do about it. And that is so hard. And people aren't reliable too because they can't even control themselves sometimes. Sometimes sin and demons have gone into their lives so intertwined, so mixed into their lives, they can't even see left from right. They can't even know where they start and the demons start. They can't get it all mixed up. It's all mixed up in their minds. And people aren't reliable because they'll hide those things from you for years. And then after years, you'll find out that they were really hiding all this stuff from you. And they'll let you down. I don't mean to be depressing, but it's just true. The people around us aren't reliable. They'll let us down so many times. And if our confidence is in our spouse, if our confidence is in our family, if our confidence is in anything besides God, we'll be let down. And that's just the truth we have to get to. You see, people aren't reliable, but God is. That's what this song gets to, doesn't it? That wherever you are, regardless of everything else, regardless of people or safety or exposure or whether you're with God's people, it doesn't matter because God is reliable. The second point in the lesson is that I'm not reliable, but God is. I want you to think about that. It's so easy to think about the point that other people aren't reliable, but it never sometimes gets to our heart, right? I'm reliable. The truth is, I'm not. Just like other people around me, I have my own personal choices. Just like other people around me, sometimes my sins and my selfishness gets in the way. But I'm also not reliable in my relationship to God. And this is one of the incredible things about this psalm and about God's character that we often forget, that we often don't meditate on enough, is the fact that even though I am one of the most unreliable people and my relationship with God is so tenuous sometimes where I just don't think about him first, I don't prioritize him, I don't put him in the proper place in my life, in my heart, he still loves me and you. You see, even though we are chronically unreliable and unfaithful, God's faithfulness to us never changes. You ever think about that? It's not a complex lesson. But it's a lesson that we would do well to think about. Because the fact of the matter is, when we start getting away from God and walking away from him like the prodigal son, we start to have this mindset of him that he is just there judging us and hating us and looking down upon us. And we forget that regardless of how foolish, truly foolish, and insolent and unfaithful we are, it doesn't change the fact that God's character is full of love and compassion, mercy and grace. You see, well, I'm not reliable. Well, I'm unfaithful. God is. And we do well to remember that. So other people are unreliable while God is reliable. I'm not reliable while God is reliable. But this third lesson I want to think about as well. We might look to the mountains, like this psalmist does. We might look to where God is. And on our journey, I like the idea that some scholars, some people put it, this is a pilgrim song. We're pilgrims. We might look to the end of the journey, but look to the goal of heaven and being with God, being with our Lord. We might look up there and just think, I'm not there yet. We get discouraged. Just like the psalmist looked to the mountains in verse 1, he says, I look to the mountains, I lift my eyes up to the mountains, but where's my help going to come from? I'm not where God is yet. Where is my encouragement? Where is my, I want to be with God. If you're truly faithful, and that's your mindset, that's your goal, is to be with God truly in heaven and be just with him in his love and in his presence, in his light, and just be there all the time. And you think about that, and you're like, I'm not there right now. We're not. It's easy to get discouraged because this world is so opposed and antagonistic and opposite of what God is. You go into a city and just look around. All the sin and all the difficulties and the hardships that selfishness and sin brings into this world, it's all around us. You have to go very far to find it. And it's easy to look up to the mountains and just be, I don't know, sad. You're not there yet. But the last, I think the real center of this psalm, the center of this lesson really, is the fact that while we're not there yet, God is still with us. We're on our way to where he is. We're on our journey to Jerusalem to worship him, to be with him, and to love him forever, to be with his people forever. We're not there yet. we might not be with him in his fullest sense, he's with us. And it's hard to comprehend that, and it's hard to understand that, but this psalmist, as he looked to Jerusalem, as he looked at being with God's people, it was all he wanted. Maybe that's the first question, is that all you want? Do you want to be there with God's people? Would you be willing to make these three journeys every year to be with God's people for the feasts? Are you willing to make that journey with your life right now to be with God's people? And if that's all you're longing, first of all, secondly, don't forget that while you may not be with God's people yet, God is with us right now. God is with you on your journey, through your day, through your workplace, through all these things. This psalmist had to remind himself, and sometimes we have to remind ourselves of this simplest promise and lesson that wherever we go, while we might feel separate and alone, God is going to be our keeper. And that's, sometimes that's just the final thought we need to keep in our hearts and our minds to get through difficult situations. Turn to 2 Timothy 1:12. This is the final thing I want us to think about. Paul knew that in the twilight of his life had a similar thought to this psalm. As he talked to Timothy and wrote to Timothy, he kept this message close to his heart. And it's kind of a similar concept. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12. For this reason, I also suffer these things, but I am not ashamed. For I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard what I have entrusted to him until that day. It's a really simple verse. I'm going to read it again. I want you to think about it again. For this reason, I also suffer these things, but I am not ashamed. For I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard what I have entrusted to him until that day. Listen, this psalm is helpful for me in that thought that Paul shared. That through the suffering and through the difficulties of this life, they're worth it. And we go through them voluntarily in all the ways because we know. We know the God in whom we trust in. And we believe that he's able to keep our souls safe and secure until that day that we leave. Until that day where we reach the presence, his presence. It's not a complicated thought. But I just wanted to encourage all of us to think about that this week. Through the difficulties, through the ups and downs of a normal day and a normal week, just don't forget that these simple relational thoughts of our relationship with God and how personal it can be, if we just remember how close he is. That's all I have. We're going to sing a song in a second, and we sing the invitation song every time we get together because we don't want anybody to not, that's double negative, we want everybody to have an opportunity. Have everyone to have an opportunity to get closer to God. If there's anything in your way, if you don't know Jesus, you don't know your Savior, now's the time. If you want to be baptized, we can do that. Or if you just need prayers or any spiritual need, please let us know as we stand and sing this final song.